This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Conspiracy. Hello and welcome to episode 58 of T. Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave, and I am joined this week by someone who did not have time to come up with a funny introduction for himself. It is my good friend, Yannick. How are you, Yannick?
I'm fine, thanks. A little bit, how do you say that when you don't have time to do everything you want to do?
Crumbs, there are loads of ways of doing it. Under the cosh is a good one.
Yeah, right, that. Other than that, I'm fine. I'm healthy, and that's the...
That is it. That is everything.
In those times, it's very important.
It certainly is. That's good to see. Right, so on this week's show, we are going to be reviewing Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 25, Conspiracy. Now, this is the penultimate episode of the season. And obviously, we'll go into more detail in this during the review, but I've got to say, this was quite a remarkable episode.
Yeah, it was not good. No, not bad.
it was not good.
It was not bad. A little bit the complete end, but just before the end was a bit like very good episode.
This episode was actually the second of a two-part arc, which started with the episode Coming of Age. Episode 19, which is the one where we complained that people weren't cleaning the floor in the holodeck. Not that that has anything to do with it whatsoever, but all will become clear as we get through to it. So if there's no other preamble, we shall crack straight on with the review of Conspiracy. So in the teaser, whilst en route to Pacifica for a mission, Lieutenant Geordi LaForge is telling Lieutenant Commander Data an amusing joke. After Geordi delivers the punchline, Data pauses for a moment to consider it, before analysing its content, determining why the joke is in fact amusing. Hysterical, in fact. Suddenly, Data's face contorts slightly before emitting a burst of forced laughter. Data immediately then returns his attention to his station, whilst Commander Riker and Counselor Troy chuckle at what they just witnessed.
Yeah, they were not the only ones. That was funny.
It was funny. It really was.
But the false laugh from Data was, you know, it sounded like a broken doll, you know, so those toys when they are laughing. It sounded like that on repeat.
I think it was a repeat of exactly the same audio clip. Very clever. You know, the things you'd have where you used to pull a string out and the string would go back in. Yes. It would, like, play a plastic record inside. Yeah, exactly like that. Yes.
Yeah.
After inquiring how long it will take to get to Pacifica, Riker orders that the speed be increased to warp 6. To which LaForge replies, "Aye, sir, full impulse."
What?
Now, this was picked up in the review, in the continuity section, and I can't work out whether it was a scripting or editing error, because it could have been, or whether the way Geordi responded to it, it could have been him just having a mess, having a winding up Riker. I don't know, that kind of breaks into the chain of command thing. You know, when you're at your station and you've been given an order, you kind of don't mess around.
Yeah, you tend to not do that, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was so blatant.
Maybe it was, you know, maybe they didn't record that, or they had a problem, and then they took this this sentence from Geordi from another moment in the episode, or another take, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, full impulse. Warp 6 is not full impulse.
it certainly is not. Nope. The crew then discuss what they will do when they get to Pacifica early, with Troy looking forward to a nice swim. Data points out that it's possible to create an environment for swimming in the holodeck, but Troy says that there's nothing like moonlight swimming, leaving Data confused as to how you can swim in moonlight. Worf is also not too keen on the idea, likening swimming to bathing.
Yeah. Yes.
it kind of makes me wonder, actually, you know, is the bridge a nice place to work in if one of your crew members never bathes or washes?
Oh, he didn't say he never wash. He never washes. No, maybe, you know, showers, sonic showers are a thing, you know?
I suppose.
Maybe he just doesn't like water, but using sonic shower, I don't know, it's clean.
I don't know. Captain Jean-Luc Picard receives a Code 47 emergency message from Walker Keel, an old friend who is captain of the Ambassador class USS Horatio. Now, I had to look this up when this first happened. And if I just waited for like 30 seconds, it would have explained it to me in the episode. But Code 47 is an encrypted communication intended for receipt only by officers holding the rank of captain or higher, basically. And once that message has been received, it's not to be discussed with anybody else on the ship.
Nope.
Essentially. During that communication, Keel asks Picard for an immediate secret rendezvous on the abandoned mining colony on Ditalix B. Even though it is a secure channel, Keel insists they meet face to face. Something is beginning.
Dun dun dun!
Yeah. What?
That was, yeah. Picard seemed disturbed by the this call from his old friend, and it is supposed to be a encrypted non-monitored channel, and for Keel to not want to discuss anything, it seems both strange and very important. But once again, it's one of those situations like, you know, oh, that looks like a dangerous trap thingy. Let's go.
Let's go. No, exactly. Right, so that's the teaser. Let's crack on into Act 1. Picard quickly arrives on the bridge and asks Data if he knows anything about Ditalix B. He orders the helm to travel there immediately, with no record of the change and no communication to Pacifica to let them know they'll be delayed. Picard goes to his ready room, leaving Riker to wonder what on earth is going on.
Yeah, I wonder how they can change trajectory like that and have no log. I mean, it's not like they're not going to log anything, but surely the computer will log the change of trajectory and things like that. So
yes.
Unless they have a special button that says, okay, stop logging everything.
Open private browsing window.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but I suppose there's a difference between making a change and not announcing it, or going through the process of changing your trajectory, putting a log into the captain's log. Presumably then for something this important, you'd also send a subspace message to Starfleet, all those things.
Yeah, message that they will receive way...
Yeah, three, longer, 4 days away. After you. Precisely. Yeah. So it does seem as though the precautions that he's taking seem kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
Other than to serve to raise more concern on the bridge about what it is they're actually doing. I mean, it's bad enough to say we're off to Daedalics and I'm not telling you why. But for them to add that with, I'm going to Daedalics, I'm not telling you why, you're not going to tell anybody, there's no logs of this, you're not to make any records elsewhere, make it so. And people are like, yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. I know something that you don't and I'm not telling you.
Excellent. Riker asks Data to look for information on Daedalics B. It's one of the planets circling the star Mira. One side of the planet always faces the sun, similar to Earth's moon, where temperatures can reach up to 180 degrees. Doesn't say Fahrenheit or Celsius, I presume Fahrenheit. There are... I think it was Celsius. No. We just determined it was Celsius in the future, didn't
yes.
we? Yeah. Which is going to be hot.
Yeah, hot.
Hot. There are mines situated around the temperate zone between the two sides of the planet, but they have long since been deserted. With no indigenous life, it's nothing but a hunk of rock, and a number of other similar descriptions that Data started to spew forth until Riker said that he understood what he was trying to say.
Yeah. Isn't Riker asking Data to look for more information, kind of, you know, breaching the Code 47 and the fact that they probably shouldn't look for that, because Picard said we're going there and that's it and there's no log and do what I say and they're still trying to get information.
Yes and no, because the Code 47 Riker's not subject to.
Yes.
Because it was intended for Picard, and Picard has revealed nothing about the mission other than where they're going to. There's no way he could carry out this clandestine manoeuvre without telling his crew, this is where we're going. So no, I don't think Riker is violating the Code 47. Okay. The fact that he's actually trying to dig more in order to find out actually what it is that we're supposed to be doing when we get there... Yeah, it's blurring the line slightly, but it's also displaying a level of ingenuity that I would fully and totally expect from Riker.
And also, as First Officer, he's in charge of the captain's security and the crew.
They need security, to know what they're going into.
Yeah,
absolutely. As they approach the planet, they detect three other ships already in orbit. Two frigates and an Ambassador-class cruiser, the USS Horatio, Walker Keel's ship. There are also three lifeforms on the planet, all gathered inside the entrance to a mining tunnel. Yes, the plot thickens. It certainly does. Picard orders that the coordinates to that location be transferred to the transporter, and he heads there on his own. Much to Riker's confusion. Now, everything that's happened up to this point, from the moment he left his ready room and he came in and told the crew where they were going, up to Picard going on his own to transport, everything is completely irregular.
Yeah.
Nothing is right about this whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And there's nobody on the bridge that doesn't think that.
No, they all know it's wrong. They all know there's something going on, but he's the captain, so.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Yes, he is the captain, but there are certain people on that ship, and when I say certain people, I mean everybody, whose duty it is to question and challenge what the captain does. Now, I'm not saying that they should go up to him and say, I don't think what you're doing is right. But there has to be, there is accountability of Picard's actions. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm aware, at the very least, Riker and Crusher
mm-hmm.
are the next level down that actually have carte blanche to question the decisions and the orders that Picard puts forward. If they believe that it's either putting him or the Enterprise and its crew in jeopardy.
As we have already seen, I don't think Crusher has the ability to question the captain's ability to command. She has the authority to remove him from command. But that's Riker's job to say he's not fit for duty. Go ahead and remove him from his
post. No, I'll take that. I'll take that. That's fair.
Both of the, then it needs. I guess it takes both of them to remove the captain from his chair. Riker has to give the order, and the doctor is the only one who can say, no, you're not fit for duty, you go. You're out.
Yes.
Next.
Essentially, yeah. So there is a process. But for some reason, it was deemed that process wasn't necessary.
Well, you know.
But I suppose if Riker had determined that there's nothing to suggest that Picard is incapacitated or is acting under the orders of something that is likely to be putting him or the crew at risk, blah, 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 then, I don't know, maybe he just rolls with it. I've got your Nextcloud back up, by the way.
Oh. Well done, Nextcloud. I'm proud of you.
That sounded more like a tractor to me. Yeah. Oh. On beaming down to Daitalik's B, Picard moves towards the entrance of the mining tunnel, where he meets up with Walker and two other captains, Tyler Scott and Captain Ricks. Walker, after confirming Picard's identity by attempting to trip him up with a series of questions about his past, introduces Picard to the others, Starfleet's finest, as Picard puts it. Walker tells him about their suspicions of a conspiracy of some sort reaching up to the highest levels of Starfleet command. They don't have all the answers, but they cite recent suspicious orders and deaths. They're convinced that people, even top-level personnel, are changing somehow, and suggest that the Enterprise may be targeted soon. Keel already suspects his first officer and chief medical officer. The only sign of the change appears to be the loss of long-term memories. They don't have all the answers, but they ask that Picard stay vigilant. This meeting never happened.
Yes. Well, given that it took place in a cardboard and polystyrene cave.
From the original series.
I wouldn't be very proud to say that I've been in a meeting in there, but yeah. Yeah, so it was weird. All those questions, it was clear that he was trying to assert that Picard was Picard. But
Well, go
ahead. No, go.
The fact that Keel said that the only sign of the changes that the people are going through appears to be the loss of long-term memories, I've only just picked up on that. But that does explain the questions that Keel was asking Picard to try and remember. And it wasn't just a case of, you know, what happened here. Keel was deliberately feeding incorrect information to Picard for him to correct, to prove that he was who he says he was.
Yeah. Classic, confirm that you are who you are by telling me something that only you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Interrogation techniques.
Yep. Yeah. So we are now in the thick of the mystery.
Yeah, very much so. And I was quite intrigued by the request from Walker to say hello to Beverly on his behalf.
Well, when he was asking questions, he asked Picard when
about
he introduced Jack to Beverly, and Picard said,
that Walker introduces them. So obviously Walker knows Beverly and knew Jack. So
absolutely, and I can't dispute that. But why would Walker specifically suggest that Picard speak to somebody who he shouldn't be speaking to about the fact that they've just had a meeting?
That didn't take place. Yes, that's a good catch. I didn't notice that while I was watching the show.
Because I expected Picard to turn around and say, well actually, no, I won't. And I thought that might have been another of these test questions that Walker was asking Picard.
Maybe not. No, maybe not.
Anyway, so as the plot thickens, we kind of amble into Act 2. After returning to the Enterprise-D, he first consults Deanna Troi, saying that he believes Kiel and trusts him as a friend, even though he is violating Starfleet regulations. And again, I did the same thing. I started questioning and I wrote down notes about this, and in the next line, I think it was, they explained how he was violating Starfleet regulations. But I was confused at this point as to how they were violating regulations, unless questioning whether there is a violation of the regulations is a violation of the regulations.
Maybe. The law is the law, and you don't question the law. Yeah. And if you question the law, it's unlawful.
The first rule of Starfleet regulations is you don't question Starfleet regulations.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Troi is concerned that Picard is putting himself at risk by entertaining Walker's theory by essentially...
Really?
Yes, really. By essentially making him complicit in the violation. He is, however, going to keep this from the rest of the Enterprise crew so as not to implicate them.
Plausible deniability.
Precisely so.
Yeah.
And totally
doesn't protect them from danger, though.
It doesn't, but it does protect them from...
legal repercussions.
Exactly, thank you, yes. Although it probably wouldn't, if there's that level of corruption.
Yeah.
The Enterprise resumes course to Pacifica at Warp 8, even though it still puts them almost 10 hours behind their original schedule. So I have a question about this.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to put them 10 hours behind their schedule, why don't they go to Warp 9? Or even Full Impulse?
Well, we know that they can do Warp 9.5 or 6.
It's something around, maybe. Yeah.
But I guess, you know, it's like your car. When you drive fast, you use more gas and you wear the car a little bit more. And I'm not sure running 10 hours at Warp 9, or well, it would be less than 10 hours, but running so long at Warp 9 might have a negative impact on the engines.
That's probable. But it says 10 hours behind their original schedule, but that is that their original schedule where they were trying to get there early, or was the original schedule of them trying to get there on time?
So it would be 10 hours late. They would be late 10 hours on their 3 hours early. Something
kind
like
of
that.
Thing. Which is only 7 hours, so it's not quite as bad.
Yeah. And Picard, when Jordy said we're going to be 9 hours and something late, he said, oh, good. As in, yeah, okay, I don't care.
Whatevs. Picard tells Data that he has an assignment for him, one that is specifically suited to his talents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did Data smile?
Oh, I didn't.
He kind of gave this proud, he trusts me with something smile. But
yeah, maybe.
Because he has no emotions per se, that would have been a conscious decision to make the move to smile. It's not something that would have come. That was really scary. Please do not do that again. For the benefit of the tape, you don't want to know what just happened. But yeah, it would have had to have been something he physically intended to do, because it wouldn't have come automatically or naturally. Picard asks Data to review Starfleet directives of the past 6 months. Whilst Data is reviewing these records, the Enterprise-D continues on to Pacifica, but along the way encounters an unusual disturbance in a nearby sector. Picard redirects the Enterprise towards it, and they eventually identify it as shipwreck debris. Speculating that it could be one of the ships they encountered at Daedalics B, Worf informs them that based on the volume of debris, it could only be the USS Horatio, Walker Keel's ship. Now, hang on one cotton-picking moment. Okay. They've been travelling at Warp 8 for a fairly reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So how was it possible that Horatio was able to keep up and potentially overtake the Enterprise? And then, Geordi states that they're still quite close to Daedalics.
Yeah. It's one of those moments.
So either they didn't go to Warp 8 and they were just sat there around waiting for nothing to happen, or they mistakenly locked the tractor beam onto the planet and pulled it along behind them.
There's another explanation. Maybe Geordi actually went, you know, full impulse. So very slowly. But I have another remark, question, you know, whatever you want to call that. It's when Worf says, "I've got an unusual disturbance nearby." I was like, okay, next line would be define unusual, you know, because okay, you've got what do you have? But nobody seemed to care what kind of disturbance it was. They just wanted to know where it was.
Yeah, because when Worf said there is I'm detecting an unusual disturbance nearby, it was either Geordi or Data. I think it was Geordi who said confirmed.
Yeah.
So he could tell what this unknown unusual disturbance was.
So Worf doesn't know what it is. Geordi said, yeah, okay, I've got something. But, you know, I was expecting Picard to say, yeah, what is it? I mean, you know, it's like, my computer doesn't work. Can you fix it? I don't know. What's the problem? I think, yeah, maybe it's just me.
So this is where you can get into real complications, because if Worf is saying, I can see something I don't understand, and then Geordi says, oh, I can also see something that I don't understand, but they might not be the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's maybe not the same unusual disturbance that they're picking up. So
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Well, let's just say that the disturbance that he picked up was the explosion of the Horatio.
Mm. Either that, or it was the gach he had earlier on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Act 3, we seem to be steaming through this. In light of Keel's death, Picard tells Riker in the Observation Lounge about the suspicions Keel voiced and connecting them with Rear Admiral Quinn's visit earlier that year. But Riker isn't convinced by the conspiracy theory. And I'm like, ooh, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Because...
No,
Go on.
I remember that. I remember that when I saw, what's his name? The guy who actually interrogated everyone?
Remick.
Remick, yes. Thank you. I said, ooh, I know you. I know.
Yes. But, yeah, it wasn't until Picard mentioned Quinn that I kind of connected the two episodes together, that the fact that Quinn was inviting Picard to come and join him to try and wheedle out some kind of issue within within Starfleet, and suddenly we've got three other members of Starfleet who are also questioning about things happening within Starfleet. And it's not until halfway through this episode I said,
those writers, they're clever.
Mm. Meanwhile, Data is still scanning through the results of his assignment, remarking to himself how extraordinary they are. Suddenly, the computer interrupts, asking for clarity of his request. Data points out that he wasn't making a request, but simply talking to himself. And he takes that fact of talking to himself as quite a revelation, marvelling again out loud about how this is some form of human idiosyncrasy, triggered by fascination or senility. Data goes on explaining until the computer interrupts him again with the words, "Thank you, sir. I comprehend."
Yeah, what was that?
Go on.
Since when does the computer interrupts? Interrupts someone who's speaking. Two, is calling the user sir
twice.
And three, yeah, twice. And three says hi.
Right.
I computer.
Okay. No. So I have some trivia on this. I was originally going to save it to the end, but I've put this in line. This is the only time in all of Star Trek when a Federation computer refers to itself in the first person.
Yeah, I hope so.
In the Next Generation Officer's Manual, which, to be fair, is non-canon, they explain it by stating that the Enterprise D's computer was one of the most advanced ever constructed and was, in fact, self-aware, which is really slightly worrying. We're getting into Skynet territory here. But apparently it's also one of the only times that a computer has expressed frustration with its user.
Well, I hope so. it's a little bit, it was a little bit too much. I mean, it was funny as an echo to what Riker said earlier when Data, you know, went on describing the planet.
Which he does every single week, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was funny in that respect, but what?
Yeah, no, totally. Totally. Data appears almost embarrassed by this, what I can only describe as a smackdown, and asks the computer to continue scanning the records.
After the computer asked what it should be doing, if I recall correctly.
That's the second time he calls him sir. The computer calls him sir. He again asks for clarification of what the scanning had been paused by that point, because obviously the computer can't scan records and converse with Data at the same time. It asked what should I be doing next, and Data said, just carry on. Ignore me, I'm not here. But then I think he made another comment to himself, and I was like, no, please don't start this again. Data then goes into the observation lounge, where Picard and Riker are still discussing the destruction of the Horatio and whether or not it was sabotage. Data reports what he has found, that during the past 6 months there has been a great deal of what he calls an uncustomary reshuffling of personnel, usually in the command areas of a select number of starbases. Furthermore, the new officers have had a great deal of contact with the highest levels of command. When Riker asks why this wasn't discovered before, Data suggested that Starfleet's left hand didn't know what its right hand was doing. He hypothesizes that the reorganizations are an attempt by a hostile force or individual to control important sectors of Federation territory. Riker suggests this might be the prelude to an invasion, but can't even begin to think who might be behind it. Picard then believes that this could be a threat to the entire Federation and orders the Enterprise D to return to Earth.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Data showed a diagram, I think, and there was some, the starbases were all aligned and I didn't really understand what was the significance of that.
Yeah.
As if it was spreading, maybe, I don't know, starting from one point and spreading in one direction.
It doesn't help that we don't know what that origin point was. But yeah. It did, like you say, it did look as though it was kind of coming out from an origin point, probably at only, I don't know, 10, 15 degrees outwards, and highlighting, I think they were star bases.
Yeah. Which doesn't mean anything, because it's a 2D representation of something that probably goes up and down in the third dimension. So.
Yes, but
yeah.
To be fair, majority of the people watching this program back in the late 80s, early 90s, and I mentioned the early 90s specifically because actually the UK premiere of this episode was very distinctive for one particular reason. I'll talk about that later. The viewers of the time probably wouldn't have even taken note of that map, that diagram, thinking, oh, that looks rather intelligent.
Yeah. The end of this scene had probably my quotes of the week. Riker saying, "What can we do? We can't just go there and go to Starfleet and ask for information." Or we don't remember exactly what he said. And then Data said, "Why not?" Then Picard, "Yeah, why not? Let's go again." That looks like a trap. Quick, Batman, do the Bat Transporter.
To the Bat Earth.
To the Bat Earth.
Upon entering the orbit of Earth, the Enterprise D is contacted by three admirals from Starfleet Command, Savar, Aaron, and Quinn, requesting an explanation for their return. Picard states that he would prefer a discussion of that sort to occur in private. The three admirals pause their transmission to convene.
Yeah. It was funny when they paused the transmission. Picard looked upset by that. When he actually does that every week, when he speaks to someone, he just, cut the communication, talk with his officers, and then gets the communication back. So for once, it was he was on the other side of that.
It always concerns me that when pauses in transmission like that occur, that actually they haven't paused the transmission. They've just put a caption on the screen. They're still listening to everything that you're saying. Actually, that almost happens in a bit.
Yeah.
Picard, Riker, Troy, and LaForge discuss the situation, each saying that they're not comfortable with it. Just as Worf is saying that he doesn't trust them, the transmission resumes. Whoopsie-daisy. And Admiral Savar invites Picard and Riker to dinner at Starfleet headquarters for the discussion to take place. Quinn says that he won't be able to attend the dinner, but he would like to see the Enterprise D again. The transmission ends.
Yeah.
Now, this is the point where I thought to myself, hang on a second, I think Quinn's involved in this.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's just
I can see why, yeah.
It's just the way it came across that I can't come to dinner with you, but I have got time to visit your ship when you're not there.
Yeah.
And when he said he wouldn't be able to attend the dinner, Aaron looked across at him as if to say, uh-huh, not, oh, why not, I wonder.
Okay, I didn't...
It seemed planned.
Now, what I found strange is that, when they said we have prepared a special meal for you or something, is that I think that's what they said. I was thinking to myself, Picard is gonna be the main dish.
I didn't think that. It wasn't good, but I didn't think that.
I thought that the first time I saw the episode, because tonight wasn't the first time I saw this episode, but yeah, I remember the first time I thought that, and I said, is he going to be the main dish of this meal, of this dinner?
In the transporter room on Earth, Quinn looks at a scorpion-like creature that he has in a case. Remick, remember him, enters the room and beams Quinn up to the Enterprise.
Yeah, so at this point I was thinking, is he taking this creature to show Picard what's going on? I started being suspicious there.
Well, that's
because he closed the box just as Remy countered. So we don't really know. There's no evidence that Remick saw that creature or not, or if Remick was, knew about that or not. So, at this moment, I was like, something fishy going on.
Scorpion-y, yes. But you were saying about you weren't sure whether Quinn was taking this life form up to Picard for him to show him, but Picard was already on his way down to Earth by that point.
No, because he walked him on the in the corridors with the Riker, so he was still up there. Well, we don't know that at that moment. But.
No, you're right. He did. Oh, of course, yes. The next scene kind of gives that one away completely.
Yeah, then there's the problem of the biofilters. So you're beaming one human with a parasite. One in his head and one in his suitcase. Why didn't the biofilters pick that up?
Let's assume that the box was itself filtered or shielded or screened. If the transporter is unable to determine the contents of a container, would the container not come across empty?
Yeah.
So with that being the case, then you are absolutely spot on that the biofilter should have. Okay, so let's take that back a step. Perhaps Remick did know. Well, because it was him that beamed Quinn aboard the Enterprise. So Quinn would have made sure that the entirety of Quinn and his plastic-encased entourage would be beamed aboard the Enterprise safely. So if the Enterprise transporter was expecting human and weird pink squishy thing, then that's what would arrive.
No, I don't buy that. That means anyone could transport anything on board the ship, and the biofilter wouldn't mean anything. No, I don't buy that.
Yeah, but Quinn outranks Picard, and therefore has essential command. Is that the thing? Does the Admiral have any command of the Enterprise?
I don't think so. Although we see regularly, people who outrank captains who don't have anything to do on the starship that just, arrive and say, I'm in charge now.
Seen that too many times, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like it's weird that this parasite was allowed to be transported. But, now we know that we could transport some kryptonite in a lead suitcase on the Enterprise, and then nobody would know.
Well, it'd be kind of pointless because kryptonite doesn't affect anybody in the Enterprise.
Except if Superman is on the Enterprise.
but I've not seen any characters who wear glasses.
Ha! Geordi. He's got very fancy glasses.
They're not glasses.
We should ask DC Comics to do a crossover between Star Trek and Superman.
That's a point. I think if you're in Star Trek chronology, I've only ever seen Kirk wearing glasses.
Hmm. You mean Clark Kirk?
Clark Kirk. His alter ego, Captain Man. Anyway, on to, eventually, Act 4. When Quinn is on board the Enterprise D, he bluffs his way through references to old times, stating that his earlier perception of a threat to the Federation was merely a metaphor for the tumultuous process of assimilating new species into the Federation. Crap. Picard realizes that Admiral Quinn is an imposter of some sort.
Really?
No! And orders Riker to observe Quinn closely while he beams down alone to dinner.
Yeah, so that's like, okay, I'm going away. You stay next to the very dangerous thing that's on my ship. Cheers.
Yes. But it's different in that the trap is now on Enterprise, so I'm going to beam away. No.
Yes.
Also, Picard wants Dr. Crusher to give Quinn a medical examination under false pretenses. After Riker reaches his conclusions, he is to join Picard on Earth, in force if necessary.
Yeah, so it was funny, like, you know, usually Picard has answers to almost anything, and when Riker says, how am I going to, you know, make Crusher perform a medical examination. I don't know, find something.
Yes.
It was very out of character, this sentence.
It's not exactly a normal situation, though, is it?
Yeah.
Everybody's having to think on their feet.
True.
Mm-hmm. Or in this case, with a transporter. Picard then beams down and meets with Savar and Aaron, as well as Remick. Picard comments that the place is usually busier than it appears now, but Remick says, it's just a quiet night. And Savar then says, a quiet night. That's such a weird exchange.
Yeah, and when they arrived on Earth orbit, they were not greeted by any ship. They were not there was no communication from Starfleet at the beginning. And every single time we see a ship coming back to Earth, whether it's in the movies or when we saw the Enterprise come back in Enterprise, actually, there's and in many other series, when a ship comes back to Earth, Earth is a busy place. Mm-hmm. It's the headquarters of Starfleet. There are, ship in orbit of the Earth. Everywhere there's the chatter and yeah, so that was really strange. It looks really quiet, like as if there was only those three people on Earth at this point. But I guess Picard was already suspicious anyway, so that only confirmed that there was something going on.
Yeah, but again, where is everybody?
Yeah. We don't know. They didn't have the budget to, pay extras.
Probably not. There's a rather fantastic special effects scene in Act 5. They probably spent all their money on that.
Yes. And
couldn't afford people. That might be why they've got these little squishy pink scorpion-like things. Because they're cheaper than humans. On the Enterprise, in the guest quarters, Quinn offers to show Riker the creature that he brought aboard and tells him about it. It was discovered accidentally by a Starfleet survey team on an uncharted planet, and Quinn refers to it as a superior form of life. He had intended to show it to Dr. Crusher, but when Riker says that he'll get his science officer to examine it, Quinn grabs his arm very strongly, saying that the creature will only like Riker. After a brief scuffle in which Quinn displays amazing strength, Riker is knocked unconscious, but not before he has a chance to call security.
Yeah.
He should have done that much earlier. at least three throws across the room earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Another quote of the week, when Quinn said, "Vitamins, they do wonder."
That was brilliant. Yes. That was brilliant. I didn't pick a quote of the week this week for some reason. I think probably because I enjoyed the story so much, so I didn't actually have a chance to think about what the dialogue was like. But yeah, there were some fantastic lines.
Yeah.
On Earth, Picard, Tavar, and Aaron raise a toast to the USS Horatio, but then Picard says that it's actually something that he wanted to discuss. When he asks what they suppose happened to the ship, Aaron suggests that it was due to the negligence of her captain.
And immediately following by, enjoy your aperitif. As in, yeah.
Yes.
Just...
But it was interesting that they mentioned the Horatio before Picard had a chance to mention it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how the information of the Horatio would have got back to Earth quicker than the Enterprise could have got it there, bearing in mind that no one else but the Enterprise, well, and the former occupants of the Horatio knew what happened to it. So I view this as incredibly suspicious that they're the ones that mentioned the Horatio first.
But we don't know how the... parasite work. Maybe they have like the Borg collective something, and those on board of the Horatio sent a message. No.
But that's exactly my point. The fact that no official communication is likely to have got back to Starfleet regarding the Horatio by that point suggests that either they were involved in it in some way, or there was some other form of communication
Well, keep in mind that the Enterprise was going at warp 8 and managed to not go far from that planet. So there's something weird in the timeline in this episode.
Did we ever determine how fast subspace was?
Nope. I'm sure the internet knows.
Mm. Back in Quorn's guest quarters on the Enterprise, Worf and LaForge arrive and declare a medical emergency. Quinn says that Riker slipped and hit his head, and then announces that he's leaving. When they try and detain him, however, he throws LaForge out into the corridor, his body knocking down the door. He turns to Worf, who slowly rises.
Yeah.
Polystyrene doors, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't even look as though the doors broke. I would have expected it. Nope. Because these are solid doors that slide into the walls, if someone had been pushed through the doors, I would have expected the frame to have gone as well.
Yeah, I agree. But no, they just fell like two huge panels, you know, ready to be reused.
Maybe they are like that by default, but if they're activated in security, so they get locked down, there's a replicator on standby that then reprints the doors in metal.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. It could be that.
So, on to Act 5, which is equally as long as the first four acts put together. At least on the review, anyway. I'll speak faster. There we go. Quinn beats Worf in a similar fashion before being repeatedly phased into unconsciousness by Dr. Crusher, using increasingly powerful stun settings. In sickbay, Crusher's scans show that Quinn really is Quinn, but she then discovers a bizarre appendage sticking out the back of his neck. And that little kind of wiggly tail thing reminded me of those little slugs that Khan used in the motion picture to like mind control the Enterprise crew.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it was one of those. A descendant or something.
Yeah, probably. That, yeah, they've evolved from slugs into scorpions.
Yeah. So back for a moment to the previous scene when I saw the phaser, I was thinking, okay, so the security is there, and then there was this shot of Beverly Crusher, you know, inside the door frame with her phaser, like you know, it could have been a cowboy movie, and you would see the hero with the gun, and I thought it was a little bit too dramatic, you know. She's a Starfleet officer, but she's mainly a doctor, you know. So she's not supposed to stand like that and shoot people the way she did. But yeah, she was standing too still. I mean,
yeah.
Remember in Picard, what's her name? The one who's working on the androids.
Soji.
The doctor. Whatever. When she shot the Dacia agent in Picard's home, right before they took off. She was shaking. She was not used to use the gun.
Yeah.
See. Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah, but her. I was, so Beverly was too still, too dramatic. You know, you would have had, you know, someone like Vin Diesel in her place. That would be exactly the same.
Yes,
it would be very stoic and very
still. Emotionless, very matter of fact.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Shots in again, maybe. You
know. Yeah. And again, using a phaser the size of a matchbox.
Yeah.
Weird.
They must have very powerful batteries. I want some from my Raspberry Pis.
They're powered by wireless technology that comes out of the walls. So as soon as you get near to a wall, it charges up. On Earth, the two admirals try to subtly persuade Picard that there is, in fact, no conspiracy. Now, I find it interesting that they raise the subject of conspiracy without being prompted, when actually that's the primary reason that Picard is there in the first place.
And
for them to subsequently try and play down conspiracies as almost never real and paranoid delusions... They're deliberately trying to deflect from what is plainly in front of your face.
Yeah.
Dinner is announced, so Picard takes a moment to contact Riker. Crusher answers on Riker's comm badge as Riker is unconscious. She informs Picard that a parasitic creature of some sort has taken control of Quinn and all of his brain functions. The spike at the back of Quinn's neck appears to be a gill, which is a helpful indicator of those that have been taken over by one of these creatures. Crusher also states her doubts about removing the creature, believing that it would kill Quinn. She instructs Picard to set his phaser to kill rather than to stun, which has little effect on the creature or its host. Picard, however, believing that no one beams down to Starfleet headquarters armed, has no phaser with him at all.
Bummer.
Picard then goes into dinner. The dish being served is a bowl filled with worms. Picard is disgusted and realizes that everyone at the dinner has been infiltrated by these alien creatures.
Well, I guess he had suspicion. I hope he had suspicion because it was kind of clear.
Well, he must have had suspicions because he wouldn't have gone down to the to Earth for this dinner. Had he not.
Yeah.
Did you notice that only Picard Picard's bowl had live worms in it.
No.
All the other ones were like stationary. But then I kind of figured that because everybody else was likely to eat the contents of their bowl, and Picard clearly wasn't going to, that they can get away with his being live and the other ones not being.
Yeah. Like sugar things. I hope it was sugar.
Yeah, kind of thing.
I mean, at least roasted, you know, worms.
Roasted worms.
Well,
a Bombay mix.
Still protein. Still protein. Yeah.
Yes, but when you're eating something, you don't want it to move around, do you?
No.
No.
I'd rather not.
No, absolutely. Picard pushes away his bowl and gets up to leave. And he runs into Riker. And Riker has also apparently been taken over by these creatures, as he has a gill in his neck too. So, apparently, has Captain Scott. The conspirators announce that they have known of Picard's intentions the whole time. And they talk briefly of their plan to infiltrate the Enterprise D. Riker moves to eat, but instead, he pulls out a phaser and shoots the dining security guard. When Captain Scott draws her phaser at Riker, Picard grabs her at her arm and throws her off aim, allowing Riker to shoot her as well. As she hits the floor, a scorpion-like creature crawls out of her mouth and scuttles away. Admiral Savar begins to subdue Riker with a Vulcan neck pinch.
Yes.
Now, the Vulcan neck pinch didn't seem to be working particularly well.
Yeah.
Because usually when you get a neck pinch, nerve pinch, whatever you want to call it, the person kind of falls unconscious straight away. But in this instance, it just seemed that it was delivering pain to Riker rather than unconsciousness. But one of the theories here is that it was the parasites that were controlling, the parasite that was controlling Savar may not have had the knowledge to perform the pinch properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I can buy that. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
The
fight scene in this the fights in this scene were very strange, and I noticed that also earlier when Worf battled with the was it the Queen?
Queen.
The Worf, you know, he had his hand, both hand, he was holding both his hand and then trying to knock Quill from like that. I mean, this surely is not effective. And in this scene, I think I remember Picard knocking, what's her name?
Scott,
yeah. With the back of his hand again. So I can understand that that's maybe to avoid hitting the actor with force, but that doesn't make sense as a fighting technique. That and the, you know, almost abysmal acting of Miss Scott.
Yeah, it wasn't.
That didn't help.
It wasn't great when Picard knocked her arm out of the way to prevent her from shooting Riker. It kind of grabbed her arm and literally flung it over her shoulder.
Yeah,
and then she was like, "Oh,
yeah,"
and then got shot. Rather than thinking. Yeah. Stuff that, poof, and shoot, yeah. Pick Riker, but just didn't do it. Yeah. But as earlier, I also noticed that Riker's bowl of worms were moving around, which led me to believe that Riker was not really invaded by these creatures. And to be honest, when he arrived and he started talking as if he was part of the Brotherhood, they called each other brothers. I was at the time thinking this doesn't look right at all. This doesn't seem as though it could be true.
Okay.
So I'm afraid I did call that one, that Riker wasn't invaded, possessed, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I have a question.
Mm.
So we see that there's this thing, you know, getting out of people's neck from behind. And then when they die, the creature curls out of their mouth. But it's probably a big mess in there anyway. Yeah. So I fear for Quinn's life anyway. but yeah, it's really strange.
It does seem odd that you can't remove it, because the imagery that we saw in sickbay when Crusher put the image on the screen was that the scorpion was effectively wrapped itself around the top of the spinal cord.
Yeah, how can it get there from the mouth?
Precisely.
It would have to tear something inside to get to the bones.
Yes, or burrow through layers of whatever and then maybe kind of seal them up again as it goes through.
Maybe. Maybe there's a small replicator and replicates tissue.
Probably. Picard then grabs Captain Scott's phaser and uses it to take down Savar. Admiral Aaron flees the dining room, and Picard and Riker pursue and shoot him in the hallway after he returns fire. The Admiral falls to the ground and, again, the parasite infesting him, crawls out of his mouth and goes under a nearby door. But they just stood there and watched it go.
Yeah.
Why didn't they shoot it?
Instead of shooting it. I don't know.
Stupid.
Some remarks later on.
They follow the parasite to find Remick sitting in a chair. He turns to look at the parasite, unconcerned. Riker goes to shoot it, but Picard stops him as the creature crawls up Remick and enters his mouth.
Yeah.
He swallows it, and it begins moving around in his neck. "We mean you no harm," he says as he stands, his neck noisily bulging in and out. "We seek peaceful coexistence."
Yeah, right.
Okay, peaceful coexistence as long as everybody is infected by us.
Yes. So, again, why didn't they shoot the scorpion before it reaches Remick? I don't know. Remick.
I did wonder that, but Picard seemed to see something that Riker couldn't. And I have to admit, I wanted to see what it was going to do next as well. Because the fact that Remick showed no concern over this parasite that had just crawled into the room gave me the first inkling that actually he wasn't just involved, he was the key to this. He was like host zero of this parasite. And I wanted to see what kind of happened with it. And I think that's where Picard was as well. It would have been very easy to sort of just zap everything that was moving. But by doing that, you don't get answers. And at the end of the day, these are explorers. These are scientists. These are people that want to understand why things are the way they are. And just obliterating everything into nothingness without actually understanding what it is they're dealing with, I personally would find that incredibly unfulfilling.
Well, I refer you to next scene.
Ah, cool. Oh, yes, this scene. I was about to say I like this scene, but no, that would just be quite sick. Anyway. Picard and Riker open fire with their phasers, knocking Remick back into the chair. Riker aims higher and destroys Remick's head, the outer layer of skin vaporizing and the rest exploding.
Yeah. Yuck.
Very yuck. Remick's chest cavity begins to dissolve, and a large creature breaks through with several blood-soaked parasites trickling behind, screaming at the two Starfleet officers. With a disgusted look on his face, Picard opens fire again, with Riker following suit, both phases continuing until the creature is vaporized, leaving several blood-soaked parasites around the chair and floor, and the decapitated, smouldering remains of what was once Lieutenant Commander Remick.
Yeah. that was gross.
It was utterly, utterly gross. Nope, I'm going to do this now. Give me a second. So, the BBC, when this episode was first broadcast in March 1991, cut mm-hmm. that entire scene from the broadcast.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah. Canada's science fiction network Space put a viewer discretion warning at the beginning of the episode, and apparently it's the only Next Generation episode to have ever received a viewer discretion warning.
But yeah, I understand that. Uh-huh. I mean, it was, it was not like, it was not an horror movie. It was clearly some gross science fiction stuff. But still, very very disturbing for a young audience, for example.
Yeah, I mean, up to and including the end of Enterprise, I don't think we'd ever seen anything quite as gross and icky as that. I mean, obviously, and
I don't think we will ever see anything like that again.
So you've not seen Discovery then? Discovery is filled with ickiness. Maybe not as bad as that.
Yeah,
but it's certainly trying to push the boundaries.
Yes, but it's not as clear as this. No, it's not a head exploding and this creature screaming and they shut it .
No, you'd expect to see something like that on, you know, late night on the Sci-Fi Channel or something like that. A really low budget Asylum Pictures production.
Yeah, one of the movies that Caroline likes.
No, exactly that. That you're exactly right. The ones that normally have verses somewhere in the in the title. So Starship Captain versus Icky Parasite Exploding Head Dude. I mean, don't get me wrong, Caroline would watch that in a heartbeat. No question.
Oh, I'm sure.
Back aboard the Enterprise D, Picard notes in his log that Admiral Quinn will make a full recovery. And with the death of the mother creature inside of Remick, the remaining parasites died. Riker reveals that Dr. Crusher had simulated the gill on the back of his neck in order to fool everyone, including Picard. As the Enterprise-D moves on into space, Data theorises that the message Remick was transmitting at the time he died was a homing beacon. As the Enterprise moves on through space, the sound of electronic beeping is heard, focused on an unexplored patch of the galaxy, leaving the ominous possibility that some or all of Remick's message may still reach its intended recipients, letting the parasites know where to find Earth.
Mm. Yeah, that was strange, as usually there's music at the end of the episode, just before the credits, and here there was not, and each time I see this episode, I always wonder, is there, you know, some kind of follow-up later on? But I know the answer to that.
Yeah, no, likewise, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think if they were trying to put across a really dark, ominous feel at the end of that episode, they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
Because I think it was Geordi that mentioned the existence of this unexplored patch of galaxy that the message was headed towards. But I did feel that on that last scene, when you saw Enterprise moving from left to right across the screen with this kind of milky galaxy sat at the back of the scene, and then they're thinking this is an unexplored patch of the galaxy, but Enterprise has just flown right through it. It's there, it's right in front of us. I would expect if you were going to do that, you would kind of zoom off into the bowels of space and then find this, you know, unexplored patch of galaxy.
Yeah, because they're still close to Earth, and that, you know, white stuff that you saw probably is the Milky Way. So it's not at all an unexplored patch of the galaxy.
Yeah, but it's not unreasonable that there could be another galaxy that has a similar visual profile to the galaxy we're a part of. But
sure,
I mean it was good, but it was, I don't know, a little bit unrealistic. They could have maybe put a bit more effort into that final scene, just to authenticate the ominosity, there's a word for you, that they were trying to put across in the first place. I think that would have absolutely nailed it. So minor disappointment at the end there.
Yeah.
But I think as an episode, that was probably, I wouldn't say it was my favourite episode, but it was probably the one that engaged me the most. There was a lot going on. I found myself predicting a lot of what was going to happen before it occurred, which for me is, it's a big thing. I tend not to get these things. I tend to miss them until they occur. So on that basis, I was quite pleased with it. The writing was good. The acting was questionable in places. Like you say, the fight scenes were a little bit dodgy. Avril Quinn's stunt double was actually very visible in a couple of the fighting scenes. It was obvious it wasn't him. But all in all, I think I messaged you after I watched it on Monday. And said something. What did I say? Wowzer. I've just watched Conspiracy, and that's it. I just left it like that. What did you think?
It was good because, you know, I think it was last week or the week before we said, you know, the teaser was very complex and we didn't understand anything. And in this one, the teaser was like you were hooked as soon as the teaser was over. As why would that his friend contact him on a secure channel and still want to see him? And then we get to the cave and there's all this mystery, and then they go to Earth and it keeps, you know, it keeps there's no moment in this episode where there's nothing happening and where you don't ask yourself a lot of questions. So yeah, it was a nice episode. One of the good ones. I would put it on my top 10, but you know, with 7 seasons and 25 episodes per season, it's hard to only have 10 good episodes. But this one is a good one. As you said, good storyline, good writing. The acting was not that bad. It's only in the fight scenes, but I guess those actors are not action movie actors.
No,
so
of course.
That's probably not what they do best. And it was not the main plot of the episode anyway. It's not a series about fighting, you know. It's not a Netflix original series where there's blood and fight in every episode for whatever reason. So
I suppose you can look back at it and realize that I think it was 89 this episode came out. It's the end of, or the, it's the penultimate episode of the first season of a fairly new foray into science fiction. You know, it's been, what did we say, 20-something, nearly 20 years since the previous season came, the previous Star Trek came out.
Series, yeah.
So they've tried really hard to fit in. We've picked so many holes in the earlier episodes where they've tried to do really well and maybe not quite hit the mark that they wanted to. Yep. But if you look at the quality of this episode, ignoring the slightly questionable acting ability of some of the fight scenes, as you quite rightly justified, you can see how much the series and the actors and the storylines have matured over the last 5 months.
I agree. Yeah.
So,
and as we said, maybe the departure of Denise Crosby had something to do with that, because she said that ever since she announced that she was leaving, the story writing went up and the quality of the episode increased significantly. And I agree that since then the episode, almost all episodes were good, and season 2 and onwards is only getting better. So maybe that give them the kick that they needed to actually write very interesting episodes.
But with no disrespect to Denise Crosby whatsoever, and I don't want to turn this into another Denise bashing episode, if the script writers are struggling to know what to do with her as a character, with her now not being part of the Enterprise crew, it's now one thing less they have to worry about. They can now concentrate on the storylines for the actors and characters that they want to have in the series. I agree. If I can say that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I understand.
So, it was all good. So, because I've done the majority of my trivia in line, I only have one piece of trivia.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is Captain Ricks, who we only saw once on the Ditalik's B mining tunnel thingy. Did you recognise him at all?
No.
Because he has one of those faces. And I apologise if he...
in two halves, so.
Yeah, I apologise if he... No, not he has a face. Most people have faces. He has a very distinctive face. And I recognised him because he was in The Voyage Home. There was a scene in The Voyage Home where the probe that was trying to contact the whales had caused lots of weather system issues, and they'd blown out some of the windows at the Starfleet headquarters on Earth. And he was one of the characters who was operating the displays inside that area.
Okay.
So I remember him from that. But actually, have you ever seen the film Weird Science? Okay, so if I had to round up Weird Science in the form of a tweet, it would be teenage boys create a woman.
Okay.
but not just did they create a woman using a very, very underpowered computer, they managed to create a whole lot of other... death and destruction, well, not death, but destruction and loads of other unintended consequences. And one of them was a biker gang who came into their front room and burned rubber marks on their wooden flooring and all the rest of it. And one of the one of the biker gang was played by the same actor that played Captain Ricks.
Okay.
And he had quite a distinctive face. He'd been made up and prosthetized up to look really quite scary, but I actually realised a lot of that was actually him. It wasn't a lot of makeup at all. Bless his cotton socks.
Good catch.
Yes, but Michael Berryman was his name anyway, so it was good to see him again in this.
All right.
So, anything else to add?
No, I think we've already said everything that I needed to say about this episode.
Fair play, then. Well, that concludes our review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 25, Conspiracy. So, thank you to everybody for downloading, streaming, sharing, and maybe even listening to our show, we assume. Yeah. Does anybody download it and not listen to it? Let us know. Oh, hang on a minute. You won't be able to.
Well, I have to admit that I do download some episodes. Well, they download automatically on my phone and not necessarily listening to everything I download. So
I have to admit, and I probably shouldn't admit this, that in the majority of cases when they get downloaded, I tend to delete them.
Yeah.
Because if I've edited them, I don't really want to hear them again. No offense.
No. No, none taken.
But if you've edited them, then I will maybe go through and read a few, listen to a few of them, but I tend just to go straight to the bloopers at the end just to see how badly we did.
Yes.
Anyway, you can help us spread the love for this podcast by carving the name of our show on the pumpkins that you'll put on the side of your windows for the Halloween season. Or if you think that's going to scare the children away and make their parents slightly mad, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
Absolutely. Our website is at teargreyhut.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and leave a comment for every episode.
If you want to transport yourself back to the 1980s in order to watch these episodes the first time they came out, you can also use something called email to get in contact. Our address is feedback@tlgreyhut.org. We do read everything we receive. We love to hear from you, but do let us know if you'd rather not read rather not, we read your name out if we read out your email on the show.
Yes, we are also on Twitter and Facebook, thanks to our communication officer, Lainey. Our username on both of those is TEGH Podcast. And we are also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast, which is the only place you will get the link to our unlisted live stream on YouTube, where you can watch us make fools of ourselves and spending about three times the length of the podcast recording it.
Pretty much, yes. That's not a not a bad estimate. Thanks, as always, to Memory Alpha. We have loosely based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by attribution, non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by attribution, share-alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is a proud member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network, and you can check out a lot of the other shows we now have there. And despite us having announced it, I think it was probably 4 weeks ago, I have now added CC Hits to the list of shows. Nice. So you can have a look at that as well.
So welcome to the family, Doris.
Definitely.
Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 26, the last episode of the first season, The Neutral Zone. And we will have a guest for this episode, someone that has already been a guest many times on our show.
Indeed so. Somebody who actually requested specifically to help us review this episode.
Nice. And I guess we're going to have this guest again to review Discovery Season 3, hopefully.
I would imagine so. I would certainly hope so. Yeah. And this raises a very good point, because we are on the lookout for people to help us review all of the episodes of Discovery Season 3, which we will start reviewing in 2 weeks' time at the time we're recording this. The first episode recording we're going to be doing for Discovery Season 3 will be on the 21st of October on the Wednesday.
Yes.
So if you'd like to join us on that episode or any of the other episodes that follow, I believe they go into the middle of January. If you want to pick out any one of those episodes to come and help us, then please do. I've managed to get non-committed confirmation from at least three people that want to come and join us for it.
We just had a fourth one, as Lainey has requested to be on the show.
Excellent.
Discovery.
Excellent. Well, there are only 13 episodes. Yeah. So, you know, spaces are limited.
Yes. Well, I guess that takes us to the end of this week's show. Thank you, Dave, once again for joining me on this fine podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you with me reviewing those episodes.
Absolutely. This is certainly turning into the one of the highlights of my week.
Yeah. We have to slightly apologize to our listeners. We are falling a little bit behind on the editing and production of this show, but we are going to get back on track so that we can publish the Discovery episodes when they are supposed to be released.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I guess it's time to end this episode so I can start working on the previous one. We will be back next week with a whole lot more Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya. How are you, Yannick?
Well, that's a good start for the show.
Also, Picard wants Dr. Crusher to give him pretzels.
Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, episode 26.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.